podcast for Jon Jones, the Manhunter from Mars, his world, and the vile menagerie of villains he must confront.
In 2007, Aquaman Sword of Atlantis was canceled. It was only the latest Aquaman series to be canceled, having survived just under 5 years, and it made it one issue longer than the original series from the 1960s. Aquaman is among the most mocked superheroes of all time, a lazy joke in a stand-up comics act. But beginning in 2009, two of the hottest creators in comics, Geoff Johns and Ivan Reis, began to redeem that hero through the Blackest Night miniseries, followed by the Brightest Day maxi-series. So by 2011, the debut issue of the most recent Aquaman series was the 16th highest-selling comic book in the nation, with sales north of 72,000 copies. The book, under that creative team, proved to be one of the New 52's great success stories. A year later, Aquaman was the 11th highest-selling book in the nation. Another attempted rehabilitation in the New 52 was Cyborg. Essentially, the Justice League of America was founded by seven major superheroes. Most DC fans can rattle off all their names pretty easily. Six of them are icons, including Aquaman. And there was always that seventh member that was a bit of trouble. Martian Manhunter was the founding member in the original incarnation of the team, but he just never was nearly as popular as any of those other heroes. And it was decided during the New 52 that instead of bringing back that original official lineup, that they would replace Martian Manhunter with Cyborg. That would allow the team greater racial diversity. There aren't actually any green people. There are a lot of black people in this country and in the world that would like to be represented as one of the world's greatest superheroes. And unlike the other six members of the founding Magnificent Seven, you won't get pitchforks and torches by replacing Martian Manhunter. While Cyborg was given a great platform to be reintroduced to readers and reevaluated as a potential great DC hero ahead of his getting his own motion picture, presumably in around 2019, 2020, somewhere in the oldest range, Justice League still kind of failed in that Cyborg, supposedly one of these great heroes, didn't have a title of his own and never had. So as part of the DCU soft relaunch, there's an attempt to correct that by giving us a new Cyborg number one. And one of the creators responsible for making Aquaman a major hero, Ivan Reis, is drawing the book. Unfortunately, you don't have a major headlining writer on the title. However, David F. Walker has been very well regarded critically for his work on titles like Shaft. And here's an actual black male writer writing a black male superhero. So this is a book that I'm certainly rooting for because we need representation in comics, and this is one of the best chances for Cyborg to ever become an iconic hero that can stand alongside Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, and yes, even Aquaman. One interesting aspect, though, is that Cyborg number one features imagery taken from Leonardo da Vinci's The Vitruvian Man, which makes sense for that character, even though that particular image I feel has gotten rather overused in comics. For instance, a month prior to that, the image that homages Vitruvian Man was done by Andrea Sorrentino as promotional art for the Martian Manhunter number one that came out a month before Cyborg. However, that art ultimately wasn't used on the cover of Martian Manhunter number one, so it's this bizarre situation where Cyborg once again displaces Martian Manhunter, and the actual art for Martian Manhunter number one appears virtually nowhere in any promotional materials that anybody would associate with that particular title. Also, like Cyborg, Martian Manhunter number one ultimately received a very commercial artist in Eddie Barrows. He's a guy I like quite a bit, and I really think should be a bigger name in comics. I think if Eddie Barrows had followed Ivan Reis on any of the titles that he'd made popular, like Green Lantern or Aquaman, Barrows would be a bigger name today because he has a very similar style to Reis. They're both from that Neil Adams school of art, both very pretty. They're both easy sells to superhero fans. And I'm reminded of Eric Larson, who always seemed to follow Todd McFarlane when he worked on a Spider-Man title, and that helped to really build up the Eric Larson brand. But Barrows instead has chosen to work on his own books, Titans, Nightwing, and he's worked on those books at times when they weren't as popular as they could have been, where they didn't have name brand writers working on them. And in the case of Titans, there was actually a strong aversion by a lot of fans to the material being written for Barrows in that title. As with Cyborg, Martian Manhunter is also being written by a writer who isn't terribly well known in comics, although he's been kicking around for a long time, Robbie Morrison. This is a guy who's best known for working on British anthology series, weekly magazines like 2000 AD and the Judge Dredd magazine. He's currently working on several of Titans' Doctor Who series. But because of that flashy Eddie Barrows artwork, it feels like the Martian Manhunter finally got his own New 52 series and his best chance at a popular reception amongst comic fans. though he's had considerably less build-up than Aquaman, seeing as how his Brightest Day story arc sputtered off as creative team from that book did not return to work on the character, and it's been 4 years since that book came out. So unfortunately, the new March Manhunter number one debuted as the 69th most popular title in North America, sales of 36,581. It was the 26th most popular DC comic of that month. It was outsold by a new Green Lantern title, a relaunch of Red Hood and Arsenal as a duo, the relaunch of the John Constantine series Hellblazer, a new Starfire series, a book about people who claim to be Robins in Gotham City who are not Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, Stephanie Brown. It was really outsold by a new series starring Damian Wayne. But hey, it did better than Dr. Fate, Bizarro, and Batmite, all of which were directly underneath Martian Manhunter, which gives the impression that there's a minimum number of DCU titles. That's the name of the promotion that DC's got going right now. And so all the ones that were associated with somewhat name brand characters were all kind of in this one little rut in the top 100. And then there are the real malingerers like Doomed and Omega Men. It's just funny to me because I was really excited about the prospect of a new 52 March Manhunter title coming out in the first or second wave of those books. And now I finally got that new 52 March Manhunter, and it's 4 years late, and DC's got an entirely new flavor that's been more successful for them that they're pushing. And it feels like this new March Manhunter title is Johnny come lately afterthought kind of thing. Since I've done the Idlehead of Diablo blog for so long, a number of people have asked me my thoughts on the new series. So I've committed to covering it on an issue-by-issue basis for the foreseeable future, but I want to give it an embargo time. I'm not a big fan of reviewing a book the minute it comes out. I'd like these things to have a chance to sell to somebody, for people who want to read it to be able to do so without having some podcast pop up and spoil everything for them. And I also like the option of giving the sales numbers on a given issue of a book as I'm reviewing it to give it at least some degree of historical perspective. Where was this book at this point in time? I've embargoed March Manhunter number one for about 6 weeks, almost 2 months now, and I figure it's probably about time I went ahead and settled in, talked about it.
Dinah Lance is a fighter, and her one-woman war is against the czars of crime, the frightened men who dread the blonde bombshell, otherwise known as Black Canary. Writer Robert Kaniger and artist Carmine Infantino created Black Canary in 1947. She debuted as a masked femme fatale that kind of skirted the law, but pretty quickly she evolved into a civic-minded crime fighter. She has mastered multiple martial arts disciplines and unarmed combat forms. Her canary cry, when properly focused, is powerful enough to punch a hole through a wall. Black Canary has, in one form or another, been part of multiple incarnations of the Justice League, the Justice Society, and Birds of Prey. I freaking fell in love with Black Canary, and I'm proud to podcast about her adventures in comics and television. Flowers and Fishnets, a Black Canary podcast.
Divergence, Martian Manhunter. John Jones always said he was the last of his kind. He lied. When Mars launches a full-scale invasion of Earth, the Manhunter will have to decide where his loyalties lie. Rob Williams, writer. Eddie Barrows, penciler. Ibir Ferreira, inker. Gabe Altaib, colorist. Tom Napolitano, letter. Amadeo Trituro, assistant editor. Andy Corey and Brian Cunningham, editors. The new book and creative team made their debut in the Convergence miniseries Adventures of Superman number 2 as an 8-page preview. I bought a fair few of the Convergence comics, but I skipped that one. Although, thankfully, they're blowing them out at low discount rates of late at various shops, so you might be able to pick one up on the cheap, but you can also read it for free. Just plug in DC Sneak Peek Martian Manhunter 2015 into a Google search engine, and a free digital version of the book is available on the DC Comics website. It might be worth it for me to just go out and buy a print copy, because the digital interface that they use for the comic, where it's a full page and then it zooms into a part of the comic and it zooms into another part of the comic, it was just bugging the hell out of me. I'd much rather just have a piece of paper in front of me, but, you know, I'm an old man, get off my lawn. NASA mission Dolos sent three astronauts to the moon at a point in time where nobody particularly noticed, thanks to the popularity of superheroes and godlike beings who dominate the media in the DC universe. NASA had lost contact with those astronauts, and it would take 3 days to send any kind of mission to follow up on them. So a pair of NASA scientists enlisted Martian Manhunter to fly directly to the moon immediately in hopes of salvation. One of the scientists, Helen Dimoff, was asked why they asked Martian Manhunter instead of Superman. And she basically pointed out that he has way more powers than Superman, and she thinks that he's a cutesy superhero with the goofy Martian Manhunter name as a cover for being something that should be terrifying to humanity, and wanted to use this as an opportunity to study the guy a little bit more closely. Upon touching down on the dead surface of the moon, the Martian Manhunter has a flashback to his life on Mars with his wife and child, who for some reason are drawn as like maniacally evil with giant Joker grins. It's creepy as hell.
The concept of past and present are different in the Martian mind. I retain the psychic imprint of these occurrences so vividly, so exactly. They appear tangible, like they are here now, real while lost forever. Seeing things that are not there. The humans would term that as insanity. I very much want to scream. I want to scream all the time. And the humans must not realize that.
John Jones opens a lunar capsule and finds a mini-armed white humanoid alien with veins all over its head and claws and fangs and red insectoid eyes. This thing has basically torn the astronauts to pieces. And then it looks up and says,
John Jones. Shh. The epiphany is here.
The creature blasted past Martian Manhunter, flying out into the void of space toward Earth. John Jones informs the NASA scientists that their astronauts are dead, but lies about the circumstances of it. Then he collapses to his knees on the lunar surface. It's an okay introduction to John Jones as a being to be feared and suspect with great power. Doesn't exactly endear me to the character. And the story arc being teased in this preview is basically the same one that we saw in several other Martian invasions of Earth, but played darker and at least this time focusing on the actual Martians rather than human responses to the Martians. The artwork is very nice, very heavily detailed. It's a little odd to me though, because Martian Manhunter looks almost too beautiful. Reminds me of when Michael Netzer drew the strip. And again, this is a guy who, for his time, was very cutting edge, tapping the vein of what readers wanted in that time period. But it's funny because in making Manhunter prettier, they also make him somewhat more human. So there's this weird dissonance for me between the big bulbous beetle brow and the rest of his face being more of like a handsome, typical heroic visage. And also Barrows draws all the lines, all the intricacy out of the New 52 Martian Manhunter costume to the point where it looks like some sort of like a video game uniform or something. He's almost too involved. I'm looking at the costume instead of the character. You know what I mean?
Kalibak to Zod. It is I, Darkseid. I command you to listen to the Who's Who podcast. Uncover the powers and weaknesses of the Super Friends so that I may destroy them.
Aquaman and Superman, Animal Man and Plastic Man, Firestorm and Nuclear Man, Batman and Hawkman, 2D Man and Hour Man.
Who are all these people, man?
They're all part of the DC Who's Who. Ultra Boy and Booster Gold, Lightning Lass and Hippolyta, Phantom Stranger, Etric and Arisian, Woody Winks.
Hey.
What?
What about that one guy?
What guy?
Mr. Pretzel, Mr. Lipstick, Mr. Mitzelfuzzle?
Mr. Mitzi's Pitlick?
Yeah, him.
He's also part of the DC Who's Who.
Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Available monthly at Aquaman Shrine, Firestorm Fan, and on iTunes and Stitcher as part of the Fire and Water podcast.
Martian Manhunter number 1 managed to hold the line at $2.99, that is, and that helped get me to commit to the book. It was also good to see that the preview's creative team, for the most part, stayed in place. Harvey Richards took over as associate editor, and Andy Corey was the sole editor, with Brian Cunningham working as group editor. The solicitation cover image by Andre Sorrentino was nowhere to be found in the actual book. The cover to the first issue was by Dan Panosian, with a variant cover by Eric Canetta. The issue opens on a splash page of a character who is roughly 8 feet tall, sitting on a wooden chair in a slum, dressed in a somewhat Victorian outfit with a fedora. A white sack hung over its face, eye holes revealed green stalk eyes underneath. The creature had four long fingers under gloves, and a sign around its neck read, "Mr. Biscuits, only wake in case of emergency." A group of young children braved the snow to visit Mr. Biscuits, with one in particular, a young black girl, willing to actually walk up to the character. Initially sitting absolutely still, Mr. Biscuits comes to sudden, swift life as the child approaches. He sticks out his hand and then gestures for her to give him what he's after, a sack full of biscuits, or as we call them here in the States, cookies. The child lectures Mr. Biscuit on his poor manners, so the creature rises up and pulls a coin out from behind her ear. The frightened but intrigued child asks, "Are you good?" And Mr. Biscuit says, after a pause, "I don't know." Next up is a two-page spread where the Martian Manhunter is flying back, re-entering Earth atmosphere after his trip to the moon. He spies an Outback Air airplane whose right engines has suddenly blown up and caught fire. Jones warns telepathically in a dialogue balloon that features his new logo, recalling the initial JLA arc New World Order, that the epiphany had arrived and that terrorist attacks would be springing up all over the world and that people needed to defend themselves. Jones is unable to control the ship in his more common superhero form, so he passes immaterially through the vessel and uses his telepathy to cause all the frightened passengers to fall asleep, all but one grinning little old white lady saying,
"We need you, Jones, to turn this planet red. The epiphany has begun. It's not too late, you know, to accept what you were created to be, to join us. Look at you with your little fancy dress cape, playing at being one of their toys. You are a very poor excuse for a superhero, but you are such a fine weapon."
Jones refuses, exits the airplane, and turns into some sort of dragon-like creature in order to better control the ship or its rough but ultimately intact landing. Meanwhile, at the JLA Watchtower, which I didn't realize these days looks exactly like the one from the animated series, the floating satellite version, the Justice League are realizing that there are terrorist attacks happening all over the world, all that begun at precisely the same time across time zones, and they know that John Jones is somehow involved. So their hunt for the Martian Manhunter begins. Meanwhile, in Dubai, a young female burglar called Pearl has scaled one of the enormous high-rises in the area with the intention of robbing a sheikh. However, before she can do so, the sheikh is visited by a man in a dark suit who soon becomes a multi-armed white Martian and slaughters the sheikh. Blood and gore splatters across the window that Pearl was resting upon, so she can't initially see exactly what's happening. But then a white hand, like a squeegee, wipes away the blood and warns,
"I can see you out there, you know. And I know who you really are. So if you do want to play this game, run. Run for your lives."
Back on the beach, an exhausted Martian Manhunter lies in a hybrid form between his normal and dragon shapes. A young boy finds him, and Jones tries to comfort the boy, but the child instead runs from the monster.
"I'm not a monster."
In Washington, D.C., an African-American FBI agent named Daryl Wessel investigates the mother of a murder by her child, who seemingly suffered from a motor neuron disease that should have prevented him from strangling his own mother, but somehow didn't. Wessel begins to interrogate the boy, who warns of a terrorist explosion that immediately rocks the neighborhood and clues Agent Wessel into the epiphany.
"You know all those bad, bad things you see on the news each night? How you can't believe that any human could ever do them? Well, what if humans didn't do them?"
NASA scientist Helen Dimoff is shocked at the news reports warning of the widespread terrorism when she's visited by John Jones. What he wants is her help to kill himself. The issue ends with a return to the slums, where Mr. Biscuit allows the little girl to keep the coin that he pulled from her ear, and with a bizarre tongue, tentacle-type appendage, begins eating the biscuits out of her sack. Literally, not some creepy euphemism.
Biscuits, good.
Having read this issue twice now, I can't help but come to the conclusion that this is pretty much the worst Martian Manhunter debut comic I've ever read. Not because the production quality is low, but simply because it's not very much about the Martian Manhunter. You really have to have read the preview story to even understand what's going on. There's not a very good explanation of the events, and you're not very well introduced to the main hero. You also have this weird circumstance where the sort of revelation that you'd have at the end of a major arc, that the Martian Manhunter has been lying to the world the entire time he's been active on Earth, that he is in fact some sort of Martian biological weapon, is just dropped into a caption box, into a panel, so we never actually get to see that story told. We don't get to know who this character is, or at least was, before the big reveal that he's not who he appears to be. So you're starting the first issue of the first ever Martian Manhunter series in the New 52 continuity without having introduced the character, without giving us a chance to get to know the character, and then giving us an "everything you know is a lie" spiel, but we didn't know anything to begin with, so really wasn't much of a lie there, was there? It's interesting to me that the very first image we see in the comic is of Mr. Biscuits, a character that the writer Rob Williams talked up quite a bit in interviews promoting the series. I can't help but get the impression that he'd rather be writing a Mr. Biscuits story than a Martian Manhunter one. And it reminds me an awful lot of Jim, Son of Saturn, another odd, good-hearted alien who adopts a young black child in the slums. So far, I don't think we've seen a Jim, Son of Saturn in the new continuity, so that could have been this. But no, we get a new character instead. I guess Martian Manhunter saving a plane full of people does show him to be a hero, but I've seen that scene so many times in so many other comic books that I couldn't get very excited about it. Although at least it gave a demonstration of Manhunter's powers that are never actually explained very well in either of the stories that we've read so far. Pearl seems to be an interesting addition to the Martian Manhunter canon. It does kind of get me, though, that she's a stark-haired sneak thief, which is kind of what Gypsy was. And Gypsy, of course, has an established relationship with the Martian Manhunter, but they decided to create a new character instead of using a pre-existing one in the same role, seemingly. The whole thing just reads very briskly, too. It felt like I was just getting started reading the story and it had already come to an end. On the art front, it is a great-looking book, but I'm just not very into the narrative. Also want to comment on the covers. As I've mentioned before, this really feels like the New 52 Martian Manhunter comic that we never got, but those aren't the kind of books that DC's trying to publish now. They're trying to get away from that 90s shiny, sharp and pokey death kind of comic and do more weird, esoteric, indie-type stuff that sold well for them through Batgirl and what they're referring to as the Batgirlization of DC Comics. And so we get this cover by Dan Panosian, which is a nice enough cover. I'm not blown away by it, but it's okay. And it seems to be trying to tap into that DCU vein, but then when you open the actual comic book, it's a totally different beast. So it feels a bit like a bait and switch. And the cover is kind of dull. It's retro, but it's not terribly engaging. As far as Martian Manhunter number one covers go, not that he has a great history of classic, iconic images on his debut issues. Well, I guess this one keeps up that tradition. I have to say, too, that I hate the new Martian Manhunter logo. This is the second logo he's gotten in the last decade. The previous one wasn't a favorite either, but there was still a quality of detective thriller and maybe a little bit of an alien thriller to that logo. I could see why they would go that way. I could see why they'd want to do something a little bit different, and it still seemed to reflect the character. Where this logo, it's just so boring. I don't understand why there's a big man and then smaller hunter. I don't like the weird sharp speed liney things coming off of the two ends. And I don't like the broken up military stencil style lettering. It doesn't look like anything. It doesn't tell me anything about the character. I wouldn't want to see this on a t-shirt. I certainly wouldn't wear one. Yeah. There's also a variant cover by Eric Canetta. That one was a bit more interesting, but it looked like a design for a monster in a video game. It was supposed to, I think, allude to the Martian Manhunter being a weapon, which is the name of the story arc, by the way. It's a development I'm not at all happy with, not at all interested in. I've seen so much more interesting stuff from Eric Canetta that to see him draw something like that's just a turn off. Let's say an inauspicious debut to the series.
Your ego betrays you. Will you not listen to reason? This won't end well for you.
Not sure if I covered this previously, but we received WordPress blog likes from the Anti-Fascist, Bronze Age Babies, Ed Moore at Indie Comics Fan, Kyle Binning, Marty Light, and Patty Webb. And on the Twitters, we received retweets from Ange, Between the Pages, Bob at RJHolmes123, Charlton Hero, Count Druncula, Danilo Santiago, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, Eli at Eel Perrin, Eternal Rage, Fantastiverse, Flotospan, Guano Man, Illegal Machine, Keith G. Baker, Cord Industries, Kyle Binning, Luke Skywalker Dobb at Dobb Creative, Martin Gray, Nicholas Cormier, Odyssey Unleashed Podcast, The Penultimate, Randy Caldwell, Ryan C. at Trash Film Guru, Siskoid, Sin, and the Top 5 Road Crew, as well as favorites from Alexi Gueros, Bob at RJ Holmes, Charlton Hero, Count Druncula, Danilo Santiago, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, David Golding Artist, Ed Moore at Teal Productions, and Ed Moore Jr. at Miskatonic, Eli Dale Perrin, Inigo Montoya, Eternal Rage, Fantastiverse, Firestorm Fan, Jacob Edwards at Man Punch It, Illegal Machine, Cord Industries, Kyle Binning, Longbox Graveyard, Luke Dobb, Mark Sweeney, Martin Gray, Mythmaking Etc., Nicholas Cormier, Odyssey Unleashed Podcast, Oscar Olalde, The Penultimate, Siskoid, Stephen Perry, and the Top 5 Road Crew. Charlton Hero gave us a follow Friday. Firestorm Fan wrote, "So there are now podcasts for your blogs, MM, WW, DC Bloodlines, and Atom. No Justice League Detroit? What the F? Vibe represent." Given that I was whining about the absence of the New 52 Gypsy in the New Martian Manhunter series, I guess I better hurry up and cover the New 52 Vibe series for DC Bloodlines. We'll get right on that. Detroit represent indeed. Keith G. Baker wrote, "Martian Manhunter makeup test from George Miller's canceled Justice League film." He's the one who tweeted to me that mask that was featured on the previous episode of the show. So I'll give him thanks for that. Luke Dobb wrote, "A college friend of mine, now at Weta, sculpted some of the JL costumes. I was sad but relieved when production ceased." Siskoid wrote, "Jay Baruchel as Maxwell Lord, a bizarre choice. I think I'd have liked it. At least until Wonder Woman broke his neck, because DC movies have to be cringe-inducing." Jacob Edwards wrote, "Fiending for some sweet, sweet MM podcasting. Hashtag hanging green. Awesome. I've enjoyed every episode so far. I'll take what I can get when I can get it. Oh man, episode 11 is up. Going to listen to that while getting ready for Heroes Con." Ange wrote, "Will we be getting an MM book review from you? Hashtag better be yes. Always listening, if not always commenting." I've got a comment, but I'm not sure who the attribution should go to, so apologies. But the content of the comment was, "Nice continuation of your Idlehead blog, longer than other podcasts like The Atom, which is in keeping with your Idlehead blog posts. I had no idea about Rogue Car. Fascinating. I'll be listening to more of these episodes soon." Martin Gray wrote, "So did you read the Martian Manhunter sneak peek? If not, my thoughts." And you can check out Martin's thoughts at his Too Dangerous for a Girl blog. Then Lilo Santiago wrote about his Martian Manhunter number one impressions, which can be seen on the Comic Vine page for issue number one. I believe he's also continued that series of reviews at Comic Vine. Count Dracula wrote, "Ugh, the new Martian Manhunter book isn't bad, but I'm sure I've read it several times over the last 15 years. Finally, here's an audio excerpt from the Odyssey Unleashed podcast that discusses this show. I've been listening to all their shows, and I recommend checking them out. This comment is from their fifth episode, Crawl Beneath the Remains of Wonderland."
Well, Mike, anything you want to plug from the internet? Any podcasts you listen to that may be better than this one?
The Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week. I've been listening to that. Most of the other podcasts I've listened to, I've got annoyed with.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I'll give you the Marvel Superheroes Podcast by Rolled Spine. You can check them out on iTunes. Also, Frank from that does the Idlehead of Diablo, which is about Martian Manhunter. Frank's good. I'm telling you.
There's a podcast dedicated to the Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
Dude. Is there enough material on the Martian Manhunter?
Frank knows his he knows Martian Manhunter. If you get a chance, listen to it. Just look up Idlehead or Diablo, D-I-A-B-O-L-U, on iTunes. Pull that stuff up. Man, he's legit. But he does Marvel Superheroes. They also have another one called Rolled Spine, which is kind of an off-topic one. But those guys are good. Those are about the only podcasts I listen to.
Podcast listeners should feel free to leave a comment on one of our blogs, either the Umbrella Rolled Spine Podcasts or the specific Idlehead of Diablo blog. Both are available quite easily through Google searches. You can also shoot me a tweet at Commander Blanks. That's B-L-A-N-X. Thank you for listening.